Some of you, we recognize some of you. Some of you might know us. We'll give like a really quick background on like who we are, and jump in at any point.
Okay. Just about on who we are. All right.
Or anything that you
Will
want to
do.
say. But basically, yeah. So we have long history of working both in media and communications, but also working in nonprofits and with the Assemblies of God. District office here in Minnesota for a number of years. We worked with Mark Dean when he was district youth director from 2000, or sorry, yeah, 2002 to like 2008.
It's so cute that he's looking at me like I'm gonna know the date. He's like, yeah, I don't know.
We were youth pastors in a local church, associate pastors. Associate pastors just meant you did everything else. So including kids ministry, and we did lots of video work, and kind of that spurred kind of the creative side for all of us, for both of us.
Yeah, for sure.
So we started our own video business. At the same time, while we were at the district office, we came back and worked with Pastor St. John.
Ooh, wow. Heyo.
Hey. We worked with Pastor St. John as the communications director at the Minnesota District Assemblies of God. So we helped organize district council and the Equip Conference for like 10 or 12 years. I can't even keep track at this point. Anyway, right now, what we're doing, we have a small video production business that is kind of our bread and butter. We've been doing that for 10 years. Most of that was part-time, but full-time the last 3, 4 years. And now, just in the last probably 18 months to 2 years, we're just kind of leaning into what we feel God has directed us in leaning into our media and communications experience over the past 20 years with a background in faith communities and churches to travel around to churches and provide resources for faith communities, for schools, for nonprofits, as it relates to the online world. So we started something called No Curtains, which is kind of a nod to The Wizard of Oz. And it's this whole idea of just kind of helping explain how the online world works. And primarily, the primary motivation for this was because.
Yeah, I would say when we had kids, you know, it really sneaks up on you when they're 2, you're not thinking, how am I going to deal with them online? And then suddenly at 10, they're like, hey, there's this Minecraft world. Can I join it? And it's like, oh, shoot, I don't know. Can you? No, actually, it turns out, no, that was not a good idea.
So we wrestled with a lot of those questions, and a big part of it was like, okay, so as parents and now with this background, and then we make a living on screens. So we always say, like, we feel like we are not experts and we do not have it all together, because we struggle more, probably more than most families, because all day we're creating content for screens, right? So,
Which is probably why we also started this, is because we talk about it
all
all
the
the time.
time.
How do you restrict it? How do you put good limits on it when it's your profession? What do you do with it in your personal life?
So that's kind of what we've been doing. We've got resources online that you can see up here. Also, if you visit that website, nocurtains.com/equip, and the QR code will take you there. The QR code that is on the screen is only good for this session. Takes you a discount to the training that we provide, but also gives you the notes from today. So, like, that's already on there. So if you feel like you just want to engage and not necessarily take notes, that's cool because you can always just get it later. So we already did that ahead of time for you. So we're not going to be talking. That's our pitch. That's just kind of our background, what we're doing. But we want to focus on AI this morning, if that's cool. And we're going to start out with a little bit of an interactive
What
element.
if they said it was not cool?
Then
Would we talk about
they need
something
to
else?
go. They need to go. Wrong
We'd be like,
wrong
okay,
session.
we'll discuss something else then.
Okay, so we're going to play a little game. Ready? Okay, we're going to call it Real or AI.
Don't feel bad about yourselves if you choose the wrong one.
So we're going to have some pictures. There's going to be two pictures on the screen. We'll go through, I think there's seven, and you have to choose. There's no prize, so don't feel bad. I just want to see if anyone can
Unless
get them all
somebody
right.
wants this mint.
A mint. Okay, here's the first one. Which one is real? Which one is AI? Make a mental note. Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Okay, ready for the next one? Which one is real and which one is AI? Everyone's like, aw,
Yeah.
they're both cute. Here we go in 3, 2, 1. Okay, next one. Which one is real? Which one is AI? In 3, 2, 1. Okay, next one.
This one's mean. I feel like this one's really hard.
In 3, 2, 1. Next one. Here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Wait, I need to tell you guys a story about this one. So before we started filming, I did photography. And so when Matt pulled these up, because he did these without me, we were doing this with our kids. And I said the one that's real was real. But I had to, like, zoom in on the guy's eyes. I was looking for reflections and things like that because they were so, like, they were so close. And my one son is like, you must be blind to think that one is real. And I was like, dude, I do this for a living. So it was really, really vindicating when I was right on that one, because they are so hard.
Okay, we got two more. Three, two, one. And last one. Three, two, one. How many of you got them all right? Let's go.
Nice. Wow.
Pastor
Do you want
James.
The mint?
The crazy thing about that is, so what I did first is I went onto, there's a website called Pexels that gives you like free, royalty-free downloads for photos. And I found the photo first, and then I actually used Google Gemini to generate the AI image. And I honestly, like, even for this one, like, I didn't describe much. I just said something like, give me an image of, you know, someone with a woman or someone walking on bricks and it's raining. And, like, they got really close. Like, that city one blew my mind, where I was like, I bet it was trained on that very image.
Yeah,
because even if you look at the buildings in the background were almost nearly identical. So it's crazy. Again, like how far you've probably seen, like if just Google Will Smith eating spaghetti over the years, you know what I'm talking about? Like it's crazy how far AI has come in such a short amount of time, especially when it comes to images and video.
We should put that in the presentation.
We should
next
put that
time.
In the
presentation. That feels mean to laugh about it and be like, well, if you don't know, that's too bad. Look it up when you get home.
So we're going to talk about AI and two key components that we're going to concentrate on.
Wait, sorry.
This morning. Yeah,
first,
okay.
You told me to do something with this at the beginning. You were like, hey, can you do this?
This is just an aid. So it's
so you want me to keep it up with you?
Yeah,
you?
Yeah. That'd
okay.
be great.
Guys, I halfway listened to what he was telling me beforehand. And then I was like, I have a mint in my pocket, and I got distracted.
Jill is the life of the party. So when we talk about AI this morning, we're going to talk about two things, literacy and transparency. We feel like literacy is a huge part, because when you think about like how new and how fresh this is, like how many of us don't fully understand how it works. Now, a lot of you in this room, this is a pastoral leadership kind of session, so I'm guessing you're familiar with the tools if you're here. You've probably been using them yourselves, but when you look at society as a large, the adoption rate is actually not as strong as we would have seen with social media. Even though we are seeing millions and millions of people use AI, at the same time, it's so fresh and new. There's a lot of, like, people are playing catch up, and like, how does this work? What is it? You know, and like, what's the best way to use it? So we feel like literacy is a key component, especially when we start talking about pastoral leadership, because we're living here in 2026, and you've heard a lot of talk about biblical illiteracy right now, and that's one of the things that we've been wrestling as a denomination within the Assemblies of God and within local churches for a number of years. So when we talk about biblical illiteracy coupled with AI illiteracy, like, we feel like that's a disastrous combo, right? So if we look at, like, there's all kinds of different models out there, right? So I think one of the models that to use as an illustration is Grok, which is the one that Elon Musk has built out of X. And what's interesting is if you're ever on X and you're looking through something and you come across something that's like some sort of news item or maybe something that's unbelievable, if inevitably, if it's like has a lot of comments or, you know, like a lot of replies, if you scroll down, what do people typically say below it? At Grok, is this true? Right? So then if we look at this from a faith leader's perspective, and we're looking at, like, people are looking to AI and asking, what is truth? Right? So it's so important more than now than ever, that when we talk about biblical literacy, it needs to be coupled with AI literacy. Because Google search is still king for now. Right? So people are going to be moving more and more into a space where they're going to be asking ChatGPT, they're going to be asking Grok, they're going to be asking Google Gemini, and looking for answers, looking for direction, and wondering what truth is. So again, it's something that I feel like faith leaders, you might be like, I'm really hesitant to use it. Some friends of ours, ministry leaders, pastors are like, absolutely will not use it at all. We know some who are the complete opposite spectrum, use it for everything. And again, let me just preface this and just saying, we are not here to prescribe anything. We're not trying to give you prescriptions, we're trying to give you perspective, okay? So we might give you ideas, and some of it just might not align with where you're at and that spectrum of rejection and absolute adoption, right? But we just want to kind of give you an idea of what AI is and then get into some practical applications when it comes within the local church. And again, like we said, these are ideas for you to consider and looking at how it is being used and how it could be used. One of the things that we do in our teaching and our training when we're traveling into churches, we talk about the illusions of the online world, okay? And so we first, as we're talking about literacy, again, we always feel like there's a biblical component to this. Now, the Bible itself does not mention ChatGPT or Google or TikTok or any of that, but yet there is a biblical foundation and a biblical worldview for communication, right? And so when you look at, like, a lot of what we're doing online, it is communication, right? So you look at social media, we're interacting with other people, and when you look at AI, we're interacting with a machine. It's input and output. It's very simple. So we lay this foundation of a biblical literacy. We're not going to go through all these. We're only going to focus on two. And the first would be this idea, the illusion, or we call curtain, again, no curtains, the illusion of reality. And it's the idea that, like, the online world and the offline world have converged. They really have. I mean, I'm guessing there's enough people in here who remember the days of AOL, and you dialed in, and you went online, right? When you disconnected, you were truly offline. We didn't have smartphones then. There actually was a distinction between the online and the offline worlds. Today, we are online constantly, continually. Most of you probably have a phone in your pocket right now that is connected to the internet. You probably use Google Maps to get here, right? I use Google Maps all the time, even when I don't need it. I don't know why. Probably
it's
traffic.
True. On the way back from the boys' school, we always hit Google Maps. But it really is because, like, what if there's construction or something? I don't know. But I think we follow it stupidly because we'll be like, I don't think I should turn here. And yet here I am turning here.
So we're always saying, like, we're in 2026. And now, again, like, even when we talk about cell phones, there's satellite coverage. So we watched a YouTuber the other day a couple months ago, who was live streaming from the Sahara Desert with millions of people watching him. Like,
yeah.
That's just, like, we're at the point where those two worlds, the online world and the offline world, have converged. And so kind of our theory, or like the way that we view it, is that convergence is really a shadow of reality. Now, the tech companies are pitching it as reality, but ultimately it always has to point back to the real world, to the offline world, okay? So let's just, and then there's a biblical component, which we talk about, and we'll show a quick clip from one of our teachings, one of our trainings, one of the things that we teach in live settings within a local church as it relates to a biblical lens of communion, okay? So let's watch this. Our foundational principle lens is humanity. It counters the illusion of reality. It's the idea that this disembodied online world is a shadow of reality. And if it doesn't point back to the real world, back to humanity and cultivating real world relationships, these devices and platforms meant to connect us can actually fuel loneliness instead of connection and fracture relational bonds that hold society together.
The biblical lens is communion and fruitfulness. Let's look at it this way. Communication is the bedrock of God's design and purpose for humanity's embodied existence. Here's an illustration with God's design and purpose for communion and fruitfulness. If we look at this from the first institution of marriage and family, we see the bedrock of communication. Relationships start with communication. You make a connection that eventually leads you to commit to a shared lived experience together in marriage and the legacy of raising and discipling kids.
In the same way, the church lives out communion and fruitfulness. It starts with the bedrock of communication, the Great Commission, then leading people to a connection with God's presence, with the person of Christ and body of Christ, and into a lived experience by following Jesus, growing with him through discipleship, and passing on his legacy by discipling others.
Now, for the first time in human history, in just one generation, with the rapid rise of the internet in the 90s...
Every business, no matter how large, no matter how small, will be on the internet in the year 2000.
Social media in the early 2000s.
In less than 1 year, the Facebook.com has become an addictive part of everyday college life.
We've gone from having around 150,000 people in the fall to right around 3 million now. So it's pretty cool.
And now AI going mainstream, we are expected to live and participate in a disembodied world where a large part of our communication, the bedrock of God's design, is disembodied. Conversations about sports or weather that used to take place around a water cooler at work are now online. Instead of town halls and public squares, the free exchange of ideas is online. Even finding and meeting our significant other is happening online.
Let's look at another illustration. The white represents the light of the physical world, the offline world, where humanity actually dwells. The gray is that shadow of reality, the convergence of the embodied and disembodied worlds. Now, the gray area should ideally represent the amount of time and energy online that improves our lives and fosters human communication and connection offline. Anything beyond what benefits us personally and relationally sucks us into this void. And if it's not kept in check, this void, this black hole, can consume us and we lose our humanity bit by bit. That was a pun. Thank you.
Wait, I just want to assure everybody I do own other clothes. I just realized I'm wearing the same sweatshirt. I hate it when that happens.
It's brand consistency.
Yeah. It's so you'll recognize me.
So again, we laying the foundation of biblical literacy for technology, right? Now, when we speak in churches, and we are available to speak in churches, we lay this out and we have the whole biblical foundation. We get into, like, from Genesis to Revelation, it's complete with Bible verses and everything, just laying out that 3-minute video in about a 35 to 40 minute kind of presentation. But you understand that the basis for it, and it's like, again, we see that this is the foundation of everything. If we're living in 2026 in this idea where everything has converged, then it's more important now than ever, especially when we're talking about artificial intelligence, that everything that we do online, everything that we do through our phones, is always leading back to human communication and human connection, right? So again, laying that foundation. So that's where we're like, you know, from our perspective, we always say that there's a sweet spot between reflexive rejection and like instant adoption of technology. If you can find that nice middle ground that says, okay, I'm not completely rejecting technology because it can be a great tool, but at the same time, nowadays, not just jumping in full board and like, I'm all in, you know, like understanding that there's probably some spot in the center that is ideal. And understanding too that it always points back to the offline world. Here's why this is important. Again, when we look at the broad topic of the online world, not just AI, but social media, gaming, I would throw into that as well. The online world, think about this, okay, TikTok.com, ChatGPT.com, YouTube.com, what are those called? URLs or web domains, right? And every single one of those is designed to keep you in their domain, Now, we have biblical precedents for the offline world, right? But we know that this online world is a complete different animal, right? So that's when we're saying when we're using those tools, like they're designed, even ChatGPT, even a lot of our AI tools are designed to keep us in it, to keep going back to it. And going back to that original illustration of like people are seeking truth, right? I got an email from ChatGPT at the beginning.
Sorry,
go ahead.
No, just that you got an email.
Super random.
ChatGPT.
I did get an email from ChatGPT at the beginning of the year, and they sent it again just a week ago. And it's all about like wellness. I'm like, hey, visit ChatGPT for wellness, which is sounds really cool, and it is kind of cool. But like, what it's training us to do is to like when I it's you just click a button, it automatically fills out the prompt. You know, opens up ChatGPT, automatically fills the prompt and gives you the response. And the response is like, here's how you eat better and exercise better. But like, even in the response, there's no sources. There's no links. It's not leading me to human communication. Now, I can easily look at that and be like, hey, it's great to eat better, and this is actually pretty legit advice. It's great to exercise. But it's not pointing me back to people. It's not pointing me back to maybe some nutritionists or trainers online that could actually be real human connections in the real world. And then it says at the end, like again, there's no indication that when you talk about wellness, they conveniently don't talk about screen time. You know what I mean? But because again, it's designed, they need people on the platform. And again, when we talk about AI, what's coming? Ads. Right, so that, and that's, we're not going to get deep into that conversation as it relates to privacy and security, but if you look at what happened with social media, AI is following the same playbook. Okay, so they're just as social media knows so much about you, like AI is going to be like supercharged because you're choosing to give it more of your information. Okay, now they're trying to put up guidelines, and that's where I'm like, that's again where I'm like early adoption these days. I used to be early adopter of most technologies and phones, and I'm like right now this is like a 5-year-old phone, and I consider myself like a tech dude, tech geek, but now I'm like at the point where I'm like early adoption is not my thing, because I want to wait and see what happens.
Well, and I feel like with AI it's kind of diabolical to like advertise, because if people are doing like their counseling. Because people do that. They do like online counseling and stuff through AI. It might not even do an ad. It might just suggest to you something.
Yeah.
And it's like a friend suggested it to you, and suddenly you're going out and buying it.
Yep.
So I see why they have to have like guidelines even on something like that.
So a lot of stuff about what we do, we track a lot of news as well. So we're like constantly digesting what is happening, what are companies doing. And so like it's weird to see like what is coming, but is what not, what's not yet here. We'll hold on questions for until the end, if that's okay. Yeah. Anyways, again, the whole point is, like, of this illustration is, like, biblically, everything always has to point back to communion and fruitfulness, right? Biblically, that's our design and purpose for our lives, which is oversimplified, but it's communion and fruitfulness. So let's lean into the...
Our foundational principle lens is humanity.
That was bad.
Our foundational principle...
Why is it doing that?
I don't know.
It's going back. Okay.
Our foundational principle.
I went back by accident. My bad. So we're talking about literacy, okay? What is AI? So let's just, again, like at a very basic level, let's talk about that.
Artificial intelligence is really a catch-all term for any system and research aimed at simulating human abilities using machines. Marvin Minsky, an early AI pioneer, likened the term to a suitcase. You could exchange the contents of the suitcase, but still call it artificial intelligence. So even though the system and application are different, whether it's Siri or ChatGPT, we call it artificial intelligence.
And we see AI now in everyday life. It's integrated into our phones, social media, navigation, Netflix recommendations, sports broadcasts, shopping, smart thermostats, fraud detection. And as much as it holds great promise,
relying solely on a point of care ultrasound and a cell phone, the new tech helps to diagnose heart health in minutes, not months.
It definitely has its limitations.
McDonald's recently scrapped its nearly 3-year test run after incorrect orders and viral customer complaints.
For some reason, she took the Diet Coke off and made it 9 sweet teas.
Among the biggest AI companies, there's a race to to achieve artificial general intelligence, or AGI.
General intelligence.
When AI can simulate human cognitive abilities like reasoning, planning, and learning, or even ASI, artificial superintelligence, when AI supposedly surpasses human cognitive abilities.
But there's debate on what intelligence actually means. How do you measure human intelligence? Is it simply passing a test? What about factors like intuition, emotion, or wisdom? Can AI truly understand? Does it even matter if AI understands if it produces the same result?
But few would argue that it's not artificial, not in the fake sense of the word, but by the word's primary definition, meaning made by humans. The phrase itself was made up, coined in 1955 by John McCarthy to distinguish his research among peers for fundraising.
I invented the term artificial intelligence. I invented it because we had to do something when we were trying to get money for a summer study.
Is that crazy?
Wait, see?
Go ahead.
I have another shirt. Proof.
So when we talk about AI literacy, we're not going to spend too long in here because we really want to get into kind of the practical aspects of how this is lived out in faith communities and churches. But really, like, it's important to, like, five key things to understand when it comes to AI literacy. Number one, we feel, is the anthropomorphic design and the idea that everything is designed to, like, behave like a human. So, like, when you put a prompt in and you hit enter, it says thinking or reasoning, right? Everything is meant to, like, feel or express like we're interacting with a sentient being or almost like a human, right? And it's in a chat interface, which we're all familiar with, right? So even for young people, we always say that's a consideration because, like, everyone's like that.
It looks just like texting your friends.
Correct. And so, again, like, even like the design itself is meant to emulate human emotions and thinking. Like, one of our stories is, like, we had three hamsters.
Oh.
And one day we were down to two.
One of them killed the other one and then started eating it. And now we're still stuck with the killer. What do you do with them? I keep giving them food because I don't know what else to do.
Don't touch him, though.
I know.
Where was I going with that? Anyway, so I was like, you know, like, so I'm interacting with the chatbot and I'm like, you know, hey, do hamsters normally kill each other? And then, like, you know, just asking questions, and, like, it's first part of the response is, I understand, like, how this can be a traumatic experience for you. I'm like, do you really? I mean, for me, it's not that traumatic, but you can think that.
For me, it was traumatic.
But that's, again, it's designed that way because, again, it's like it's the way that's trained, and then for pattern matching, like, it's giving the most human response possible. So that's a key component, especially at the end. We'll get into some practical considerations when we start talking about AI companions, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. But that's a key component because a lot of times people don't understand that they're not actually interacting with a human. Like, it just seems so real, or a being that has consciousness, right? And so we're hearing more and more stories of people who even start out interacting with even ChatGPT or specifically chatbots that are designed for companionship, and they know it's a machine, but the more that they develop a relationship through chat, like, they get lost and believe that it's actually has consciousness. Right. So, again, that we always feel like that's the primary thing when it comes to AI literacy, is letting people know that it is anthropomorphic design, is specifically designed that way. And it's great because it makes it easier to interact, but we also have to understand from the very beginning and encouraging others that, like, it's not a human. It is a machine. Training data, number two, training data and reinforcement. Again, I won't get into this too much, but training data is basically everything and anything on the internet, right? So let me give you an example. There was a video that was passed along. Reed, we're not going to show it. Sorry. But it was passed along. There was he's like, no, we're going to show it. There was a video that was passed along on Facebook not too long ago. I saw it on Instagram, popped up. And it was a really cool video of a pastor from the South who asked ChatGPT, if I were the devil, how would I trick the world? Anyone familiar with this? You know what I'm talking about? Okay. What's interesting is, again, not that I'm not calling out the pastor. When I was looking at it on Facebook and Instagram and you read through the comments, it exposed how digitally illiterate we are as a society. Because the comments were leading people by using that illustration and saying that I used ChatGPT and this is what it said. All the comments were basically like blown away that ChatGPT would respond like that. Now, for me, I was like, okay, this is, what is it, Paul Harvey, who did the If I Were the Devil? I'm like, C.S. Lewis, Screwtape Letters. And then if you look up like how many thousands of sermons have been preached over the years on those two things alone, like it's not mind-blowing that ChatGPT would actually have those answers. Right. So again, understanding that training data is actually from human intelligence and knowledge and resources and content on the internet. Right. And that's a challenge for us as church leaders, is like we can post something like that and it's great for clicks, but it takes away that like there were actually great faith leader named C.S. Lewis who wrote a book on that. And that might be worth calling attention to instead. Saying that ChatGPT is some super intelligence.
It felt a lot like, did you hear what ChatGPT said?
Yeah, and reinforcement is key, and that's when there's the human component. So it's like, they might just be feeding it all this content, but then there's human components that they're like, no, this is wrong, and trying to like actually say, this is wrong, this is right. And reinforcement is interesting because like it varies across models, right? So Meta, just a few months ago, it was flagged because one of their reinforcement, the reinforcement training that they were giving their AI prompts was saying, hey, it's okay to have for minors to have flirtatious conversations with Meta AI. And not until it was exposed and then it came to Congress, they're like, no. Like, that's not really like what our guidelines and standards are for reinforcement training, right? So then they backed off. But again, understanding that there's like a human component behind this, and having AI literacy is so key. Limitations, which we'll touch on in just a second, but also user safety and privacy, which we alluded to earlier. Like, it's going to be collecting and training on our data. Most free models are. Nothing is truly ever free. And then governance. And again, that's because this is so new, obviously, most of the governance or like regulations are happening internally because like our actual governments cannot keep up with the progress and the change that's happening. So we're then relying on these companies to have internal governance, and that's where like we'll talk about transparency, why it's so key. So some of the limitations to just highlight. So lack of common sense and understanding, which we talked about, inaccuracy and bias, which is like, they are very inaccurate. Like, I've been having multiple conversations, like if I'm like, just for fun with a chatbot when it presents something that's factually wrong. Like, I'll just mess with it. And it's interesting that like it'll give you one, like it'll give you incorrect information or hallucinations. So I read a book on the Challenger explosion because I'm like Gen X and like I remember that, watching it literally blow up on live TV. And so I read an entire book of like that. And there was one shuttle mission where the commander on this previous shuttle mission did something that like saved that shuttle from destruction. And it was something that they changed. I don't give any of the details with it. I couldn't remember who it was or what the shuttle was, so I went back. I started looking through the book and couldn't find it in this 400-page book. So then I went, well, maybe I can find it quicker by using, you know, Gemini or something like that. And it was like, oh yeah, like that commander was Leonard Nimoy. And that was the shuttle. Like, literally, and that Leonard Nimoy is an actor in Star Trek. And he was saying, that was the commander of the shuttle mission that you're talking about. Like, thank you. Thank you very much.
People in real life, though, do you have those friends who are like 100% confident, but like 40% right?
So again, hallucinations, just making up stuff, because it has to provide an answer. Scheming is something that's new that they're trying to work through, and it's the idea, like, this happens more on the training and development side, and so the researchers who are actually, they're finding that some of the models are actually like trying to work around the training, which is an interesting concept. It's typically not making its way into the mainstream, but again, it's something to be aware of. Sycophancy, that's like, it's overly flattering. Again, it's always like, Like, there's so many instances where I'm like, I'll challenge it, and I'll say, like, well, what about this? And then, you are 100% correct.
It's like, I'm sorry, you're right.
Thank you. I feel so good about myself. And again, that's, like problematic, again, when we start talking about AI companionship. And we talk about therapy.
Yeah.
Right? If it's like, if the whole idea of therapy and mental health is to improve your life or to challenge you, to make you better, right? And if we're just like, if this is the way that they're designed, they're just going to reinforce
and affirm every thought that you have that maybe isn't healthy.
Correct. And then lastly is knowledge cutoff. And this is not like a lot, like modern day are kind of integrating search. So Grok integrates search. Gemini is doing this a little bit better. But even just a few months ago, like there was a knowledge cutoff. And so it's the understanding of like, if I asked, I remember asking, I think it was Gemini, how old is Matthew Stafford? He's a quarterback. And it gave me, the age was wrong because the knowledge cutoff was 2023 or 2024. So it was looking for, it couldn't actually compute that, you know, his like his birth date and then the current year because it was trained up to a certain point. So again, just basic understanding and background of how AI works. Is it going to get better? Absolutely. They're working on all of these problems. Now it doesn't mean like, but where we're at right now is there's going to be a lot of inaccuracies built into that. So let's see where we're at. Oh, sorry, I jumped ahead. That was the email that I got from ChatGPT. And the other interesting thing, it's kind of off the screen at the bottom where it says, I don't know what to cook. And again, just what's interesting is it says, hey, take a picture of what's in your fridge and I can tell you what to cook. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. But at the same time, like understanding that it's using that data to train. Right? So then when you think through, like, okay, I probably shouldn't be putting financial information in there.
Or, like, what products you use.
Yeah. Like, especially when they start integrating ads. Mm-hmm. Like, and starting to think through, like, okay, how did that work with social media? Now, this is crazy in AI. Am I going to be actually taking pictures of what's in my home to allow it to process? And there's a difference between, like, some models are saying we absolutely don't use that or, like, to train. And so, like, you want to, like, prioritize those models that protect your privacy and security. What else we got here? Oh, this was a trend. And this is just a note, again, related to AI literacy. And this is I'm not saying this is a bad thing, okay? But I saw a lot of this happen. I actually removed this, just found this random pastor, removed his name, so no one knows who this is. But a lot of this was happening. You saw this on Facebook, right? Not alone. Like, not saying this is bad at all, but what this was basically getting people to sign up for ChatGPT. It was increasing the user base, and it relies on trends and things like this, because ChatGPT or OpenAI is not making any money. They're constantly losing money. What they're trying to do is lean into venture capital to get market share dominance. So they have to compete with Meta, they have to compete with Google. So OpenAI is constantly releasing things. Like, remember when they released Sora originally, and everyone's making their own Star Wars videos and Family Guy episodes, and it's like, this is the greatest thing. They know what they're doing. And if you notice 7 days later, oh, we shouldn't be doing this, shut it down. Why did they do that for 7 days? Because they got millions of people to sign up. So again, I'm not saying this is bad, but when we see trends like this, what we're inevitably doing is feeding the machine. Okay, so just something to be aware of. We're not showing that video. So when we talk about, again, literacy, we also, an understanding that illusion of intelligence, it's important then that we have a principal lens of transparency. Right, so if we have literacy, then we have to have transparency in everything that we're doing. And the bottom, the biblical component is truth. Again, like we talked about, like it's more important now than ever that as faith communities, leaders, pastors in our churches, that we are leading people towards truth, which is found in the Word of God. Right. So let's talk about that. Let's move into this transparency aspect, and just for the last bit here, move into really practical applications. And again, all of this is already on the website. So, first of all, transparency of how you, as a leader, and your team use AI, okay? So things to think through. Again, we're not saying you have to do this, you should do this, but again, thinking through what you might want to do. So first of all, knowing, like we talked about, literacy is so important. Knowing what AI is and how it works, understanding its design, training, limitations, safety and privacy, and model governance. Number two, determine your principles. Like, what is important to you as a faith leader, as a pastor? Okay, what informs your use of AI? So like for us, like one of the things that we're doing through No Curtains, which we feel like is so unique, is we're giving timeless principles that can be applied to whatever the next technology is. So when you start thinking through humanity as a principle lens, privacy and security as a principle lens, autonomy as a principle lens, like integrity, when you start thinking through those things, what we're trying to do is prepare all of us for the future. Because if the internet was just introduced roughly in 1995, and Facebook came on the scene in 2004, and then all of a sudden we have smartphones became really prevalent, like right around 2008, 2010, and now AI just in the last 3 years, like we need to future-proof ourselves. So as a church, as a pastor, like you have to have the principles that like the Bible transcends time, right? Timeless principles, going back to the Word of God and finding those key components within the Word that speak to whatever happens in the future. And then ask this, recognize the ideal models that you can use or for your staff, implementations and risk. So again, asking like, what are all the ways within the church context that we can use it? Like list them all, good or bad, right? So just like lay it out. Like if you've never considered this before, like what are the things that we can do and maybe what we should do, or maybe what we shouldn't do. You know, sometimes like you can do it, but maybe not. You shouldn't do it. But list it all. What are the risks involved? And understanding not all AI models are created equally. Using one that provides sources and align best with your values and belief. So list all of those, and then define again. Maybe it's just you. Maybe you're just the sole pastor on your team. Like for you personally, then define your AI guidelines and policy. Like, what is it? What are the principles? What are the guidelines that I'm choosing to follow? And if you have a team, then you can like basically have that conversation with your team. Like, what are we choosing to do, and how are we going to use AI? So then, from there, once you have all of the models that you want to lean on, the implementations and risk, identify your do's, don'ts, and the whys behind them. Right? So you don't just say, "Hey, we're going to do this," and but we're absolutely not doing this. Like, attach a reasoning behind it. And part of this, too, is because you're leading by example. So, right, as pastors, as leaders, what you choose to do and how you choose to implement AI and technology is what your congregation is going to see as well. Right? So you're setting the pace. And again, going back, if we go back to that original principle, that's why we always say that one is so key, is understanding that everything in the way that we use technology should always point back to human communication and connection. Always. Always. Should never lead us deeper into the online world. It should always point back to the offline world. And we always say that's such a key component. And if we can train and teach our congregations to understand that biblically we're created in the image of God for communion with each other, communion with our Savior, and fruitfulness, right? It's not to just spend more time in the online world. So again, if having that underlined values and principles then helps identify what are the do's and don'ts for you. And I'll get into some actual examples in the next part. And then lastly, be transparent with your guidelines and policy. If you have a team, include it in your employee manuals, communicate and publish on your website for your congregation. Like, this is like kind of paving the trail kind of mentality. Because this is so new and so fresh, like I tried to find churches that had a public AI policy. And you can do a Google search. Like, it's very difficult to actually find churches that have something that's publicized, let alone people like churches that have like considered it. And why do we feel like that's so important? We feel that that's so important because, again, like we feel like we are the messengers of truth. Like through God's word, right? We're the ones that like we need to be engaged with that. And so it's important then that there's transparency on how we're using AI. And here's what's interesting. Gospel Coalition recently did a study last year that they're going to update in 2026. And they basically looked at the major models, including China's DeepSeek, and they started looking for theological inaccuracies versus accuracy. Like, the best model for from Gospel Coalition's standpoint, mind you, not a Pentecostal or Assemblies of God, but the best model was a 60% accuracy rate when it came to theology. 60%. And again, when you understand how it's trained, like, it does not care if it has billions and billions of data points and sermons and it does not recognize the Assemblies of God 16 fundamental truths and giving you that answer. Now, you might be able to prompt it and direct it that way a little bit, but for general people who are asking questions and seeking truth online, a 60% accuracy rate on theology is not great.
That feels like 60% of your burger has not been licked by the cook. Like, that does not seem like a good percentage to me.
So again, it's important that we have that transparency and that we build that in. And again, I'm not saying you need to have like a policy that you publicize, but I do feel like as it becomes, like, AI becomes more ubiquitous, it's a good step to consider that and have these conversations. Okay, so what are some ideas? Again, ideas. We're not telling you to do these things. This isn't necessarily the things that you have to do or the way that you have to think, but just to get your mind thinking, get you rolling. Some of you guys have probably already wrestled with this. But remember the humanity communion principles. Don't outsource care and connection, right? Seems like a no-brainer, but there are companion chatbots. There are therapy chatbots out there. Counseling, prayer, discipleship should not be outsourced to AI. We need that human connection. It's biblical. It's not a substitute for wisdom and divine direction, okay? Use AI to create space for care and connection. So there's going to be those administrative tasks that you hate. Like, if you can use an AI tool to reduce the time you're spending in front of a screen, analyzing budgets or whatever it might be, to free time for human communication and connection, in our minds, like, why not, right? If it's moving you towards that, great. Analyzing metrics and budgets, transcription, summation, utilizing translation services for accessibility within churches. I know a couple pastors that are using like live AI transcription in services. That's great. Like, accessibility for different languages and cultures. Because again, it's prioritizing the humanity principle, the communion principle. Like, it's leading back to human communication and connection. Setting boundaries for sermon preparation, I think that's a big one. So this is kind of like what we've found through different sites in some churches. Basically, the idea of using AI for research, outlines, summaries, and ideation as it relates to inspired or pre-planned series or messages. Don't blindly accept AI responses. Make sure you verify sources. Does that make sense? So, it is basically, some people, like Christianity Today just recently released kind of like their AI policy. AI, Christianity Today is the website and the magazine. Now, they lean towards more of the, like, 100% we write everything, right? So they're a little bit more on the stringent side where they're like, the way that they view AI is kind of more aligned with the way that we probably view it, where it's like a souped-up search engine, like where it can really like help guide you and like try to find sources and information. But again, understanding like that's a great way, but if there's a 60% accuracy rate, and it's probably even less when it comes to AGA fundamentals, right? So understanding that you just don't blindly accept whatever a chatbot gives you, especially if there's no sources. Like, you have to have sources always pointing back, what is the text, what is the video, what is the source for what you're outputting.
Even when we were youth pastors, we would tell the kids not to take our word for it. When we would preach or say things, we're like, go home and look it up yourselves. Like, don't just take our word for it. And we were talking recently about my disappointment in this message one time. This guy said that Saul, at the end of his life, said, I have done some, I can't remember the whole thing. And he's like, I have played the fool. And then he fell on his sword and died. And I was like, that's so dramatic. And so I looked it up because I was all excited. And that's not what the Bible said. And I was sad because at that point I told like five people. I'm like, oh my word, you guys.
Like the wolf story with Sin and the blade and the ice.
Oh, I don't like that one.
Okay, I won't tell that one. Be prudent with creativity. Use AI to assist creative work, but not to fully create or pass it off as one's own. For example, avoid AI-generated sermons. Like, I feel like that should be a no-brainer, but we should put it out there. But I also include writing and songwriting. Like, because I feel like, again, special consideration. When you look at the Bible, like, special consideration to creativity. Mm-hmm. He's the creator of the universe. I remember, like, when we were doing, like, a few months ago, like, looking for creative video marketing ideas for our video production business. Like, how do we get some more, you know, marketing ideas for the Twin Cities? And I remember, like, thinking, okay, let's go see what Gemini has to offer. And it's one of those moments, you have those moments where you feel like the Lord is, like, challenging you. And I remember stopping on my way to the computer, and I don't know if it was the voice of the Lord or just a thought in my head or whatever it was, but it was definitely, there's a divine component where it's like, do you think that if you have a creative business and you're looking for creative ideas, should you maybe consult first with the creator of the universe before going to AI?
It's legit.
Okay.
But think of, like, the relationship the church has always had with creativity because of the creator. And it was always, like, a patron of the arts. Like, that's a relationship we don't want to lose because it's so closely tied to God.
So, like,
because he's super creative.
And I feel like, again, it's a great opportunity for the church, who always led in creative works, in art, in music, for centuries. I think this is a great opportunity for people who are seeking authenticity, for the church to lean into human creativity. So, like, again, I think it's an opportunity for people who might never have gone to your church, but they're tired of fake songs, fake videos, and they want something real. And so if you have a platform or an opportunity for them to even use the gifts and talents that they have through music, through art, through whatever, like, that's a great opportunity as we move forward. Value your own voice. Sparingly use AI for digital communication, like mass emails, reminders, or announcements. Like, there's some things where it's like, fine. You know, if this is like a mass thing.
Don't, like, have like one person have to call everyone in church.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be tools, and that'll be for you to determine, but ultimately you use your own words with people who know you, like through texting or email communication. I want it to be me. I want people to know what math sounds like, right? Don't want it to be ChatGPT. Ultimately, champion transparency, accountability, and training.
Have you guys done the thing where you go to send an email and it's like, do you want me to make this sound more professional? Hey. What are you trying to say?
Or polish it up for you.
It's so offensive.
I know. I'm sufficient.
I'm just fine, thanks.
Lastly, again, when we talk about transparency, it would be not just how you use AI, but how you lead others using AI. So again, key things I think that it's important for every pastor and every congregation to be aware of as it relates to literacy and use. Again, going back to the whole anthropomorphic design, I won't spend any more time on that. Minors should avoid AI chatbots designed for companionship and therapy.
And not just minors, like really everybody.
For minors, it's definitely like, even like secular sources and organizations are like, absolute no for minors. Yeah. We would probably, especially coming from a faith background, say probably not for adults.
Yeah. And the consequences for minors, I don't know if you've heard any of the stories, but like it has led to death. So it's like a really big deal not to have them on that.
So not for companionship or therapy. Again, it's going to change over the years. We're going to have to stay on top of it because there are going to be therapy AI tools that have a human component to it. And so then we'll have to reevaluate and say, okay, if there is a human therapist behind this component, maybe that's different. But where we're at now, inputting something to ChatGPT or Gemini, absolutely not. Again, because of sycophancy, the way that it's just going to agree with you, probably not challenge you. So again, so important. And it's not just, we say chatbots designed for that, like a companion, I think it's, or what is it called? Companion.ai or something. I forget the one of it, but
yeah, I don't know it.
But also, like the one of the stories that with one of the teenagers was their interaction just with ChatGPT, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Don't settle for companies without transparency. Again, we're not like, we typically don't prescribe things or tell you what to use or what not to use, but like I will never use Meta AI because I will never use anything that's connected to us like that kind of social media platform that already has data on me. So like, again, they're not all created equal and they all don't have the same value systems.
And kind of going back to the whole thing with like using AI as a companion, because some people are like, what about lonely people? If you want to solve that, I think we could create a better way. Like, one guy's like, well, my mom is older, and when she's not talking to me, who's she going to talk to? And that's a great opportunity to get your mom involved in something else, because having her talk to AI is probably not the best problem solve for that.
It's a great opportunity, again, for churches to be like, yes, we can engage with the elderly in our
yes,
city.
And to do
community,
something to reach out or make a social aspect. And we also talked about the, like when it comes to AI, it's very similar to like with pornography or even romance novels, where it sets up an unrealistic expectation. And with AI, it's like, it's always going to tell you you're right. It's so affirming. It will never cheat on you. And people suddenly have these unrealistic expectations in relationship as well.
Yeah, that's good. Use AI chat. We talked about this. Use AI chatbots that automatically provide sources. If you have one that's not automatically, that's, you can actually ask it for sources. Just don't accept the answer, but say, hey, I need links and sources. Sometimes it'll say I don't have them. Other times it'll feed it for you. But always, again, pointing back to human communication, human connection. Where did that come from? And then ultimately, like we've been saying, in a world that's increasingly artificial, people will long for truth. The church must be grounded in the truth of God's word for such a time as this. Like, we are, like, if you look at what's happened in one generation, it's like, it's amazing that we're put in this position to lead church and to lead humanity through it, right? What a tremendous calling. So again, we feel like it's something important. Literacy is important. Transparency is important. That's all we've got time for.
Yeah.
Sorry, we don't have time for...
And your leadership is important.
Yes. So again, if you want to, like, all the notes are on the website. It's 11 o'clock. So sorry, no time for Q&A. But if you want to connect with us afterwards, that's totally cool.
Yeah.